Our next reading is from John chapter 18, and it's on the insert which is in your carol sheets. Jesus before Pilate. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" For over 100 years now, there's been a big divide in the UK. Not between north and south or between rich and poor, but the much bigger divide caused by a savoury spread which emerged from a factory in Burton-on-Trent in 1902. When it comes to Marmite, passions run high. You either love it or you hate it. And in that respect, I guess it's rather like Christmas. Some people love it. They love the nostalgia, the festivity, the giant illuminated snowmen, and the prospect of unusual gifts. I mean, when else are you going to be given a motorised golf ball cleaner or a certificate saying that you now have a star named after you? Other people hate Christmas for all of the above reasons and more. For many, it's just a very stressful time. According to a recent survey, the average preparation time for Christmas is 13 full days. Shopping, wrapping, decorating, cooking, cleaning. Tragically, marital breakups peak at Christmas and at New Year. And apparently heart attack fatalities are at their highest in December among the middle-aged, because of what researchers call the Merry Christmas Syndrome. So overindulging in the potent cocktail of stress, booze and food. When it comes to Christmas, which side of the big divide are you on? Do you love it or do you hate it? Myself, I'm a lover. I'm not particularly into books from Aunt Mabel on how to use yoga breathing to reduce your carbon footprint, but I love Christmas because I love what Christmas is really all about. I love the message of Christmas, which is such fantastic news in a world in which good news is in short supply. But nowadays, in our increasingly secular culture, you've got to be a pretty sharp detective to uncover what Christmas really is all about. Christmas cards, for example, are not going to give you much of a clue, are they? Only 1 in 100 Christmas cards sold in the UK contain any religious imagery or message, according to a recent survey. And the rest, apparently, are just an assortment of Christmas trees, Santas, Rudolph the Red-Nose, and plates of Brussels sprouts. Very occasionally, though, you do still come across the odd collector's item card, which features a baby in a manger with shepherds and wise men standing around. And those cards give you a big clue about the real message of Christmas. It's all about that baby. I love Christmas because of that baby. But what is so special about him? Why shouldn't we replace him with Rudolph or with the giant snowman out on the quayside? Well, the answer is found in the passage I just read in John 18, which is on your sheets. And you may have thought the choice of Bible reading a little bit odd for a carol service. It relates an incident in the life of this baby about 30 years down the track, when as a man, Jesus is on trial. It takes place the night before his execution. But it gets right to the heart of Christmas, because in this encounter, Jesus states very clearly why he came into the world. So in verse 37, towards the end of that passage, and it's in bold type on your sheet, Jesus says, "For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Why the baby in the manger? Why did Jesus come? Why Christmas? Well, Jesus says he came to bear witness to the truth. So not just to give us his opinion, not just to give his take on things, or even just to tell us what is true for him, he says he has come to testify to the truth, the truth. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But the truth about what? Well, if you read through John's Gospel account, it's the truth regarding just about everything that ultimately matters in life. The truth about God, that he is the creator whom we were created to serve. The truth about us, that we prefer to live with ourselves as boss instead and to run our lives as we want. The truth about the future, that one day we will all face our creator as our judge and we will be called to account. The truth about God's love, that he sent Jesus to rescue us through his death for our forgiveness, and he now offers us eternal life and personal relationship with him. And the truth about our response, that we need to accept Jesus' rescue and his rule in our lives if we're going to avoid staying cut off from God now and eternally. I don't know if you got to see that film, The Inconvenient Truth, but that title crystallizes one of the problems with truth. Truth can be awkward, challenging, inconvenient, uncomfortable. Someone wrote in one of the papers this weekend, "My view of God is a personal one. In my mind, you can't get much broader than God as a term. It's the air you breathe, the animals, the world outside, as well as inside of all of us. It's a something out there. It's a space," and on the article goes. It's interesting, isn't it, how this sort of personal God, who is just a product of our own minds, is never remotely challenging. But reality, the truth, is not like that. There's a poem which begins, "If you're sitting comfortably, I suspect I'm not giving you the truth." And that's the trouble with the truth. It can be uncomfortable. And you may have felt slightly uncomfortable, even as I began to explain this truth to which Jesus came to testify. But who would want the alternative? Building your whole life on what is untrue, on what is a lie. There can be no future in building on sand. Some years ago, I ran a discussion group for some of the faculty at a university, and the sessions covered the big five. So not the elephant, the rhino, the leopard, the buffalo, and the whatever. What's the fifth one? Rhino? Have I had him? Anyway, you know what the big five are. Not those big five, but the five big questions of life. Origins. Where have we come from? Meaning. What is the point of life? Identity. Who am I? Morality. What is right and wrong? And destiny, where am I going? Jesus was born to testify to the truth. He's saying that in him we find the answers to all the big questions. Now perhaps at the moment, maybe at the moment you can relate to Pilate and his sceptical dismissive remark in verse 38, where at the end of the passage he says, "Pah, what is truth?" Perhaps you've given up any hope of finding ultimate truth in life. Well, wouldn't this Jesus at least be worth a listen? "I've come into the world," he says, "to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." But what a thing to say. I mean, how arrogant can you get? If you're on the side of truth, he's saying, "You will listen to me." Yesterday, the Times ran an article which is headed, "I'm not religious, but..." And it was asking people who are not religious what it is that inspires them, what it is that brings a sense of wonder to their life. The founder of a fast food chain said this. She said, "I have an almost spiritual experience when I eat caviar. It feels quite zen, quite otherworldly." I'd love to know what happens to this sense of otherworldliness when the bill appears. But anyway, that's a different story. But another person interviewed was a forensic archaeologist. And he said that he found comfort in science and in nature. But at the beginning of his reply, he said this. He said, I'm always suspicious of people who are convinced that they have a monopoly on the truth. This suspicious attitude to absolute truth claims in our society, it makes someone like Jesus an increasingly controversial figure. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice, he says. What right has he got to go around saying things like that? Who on earth does he think he is? Well, that is exactly the right question to ask. Who does he think he is? The identity of this man Jesus is the key issue. Who is he? And it's a question which began to get under the skin of Pilate, who was questioning him. Pontius Pilate was the Roman governor of Judea in AD 27 to 37. The Jewish leaders had brought Jesus to him for trial because they did not have the power to put him to death under Jewish law, and they wanted rid of him. Pilate asked Jesus in verse 33 if he is the king of the Jews. The answer Jesus gives in verse 36 moves the discussion up onto a completely different level. My kingdom, Jesus says in verse 36, my kingdom is not of this world. Jesus is a king, all right, but he's king of a kingdom which is not located on this planet. Throughout John's gospel, Jesus speaks about the kingdom of God, which would last forever. Jesus is the ruler of this eternal kingdom of heaven. After Pilate had questioned Jesus, he had him flogged to appease the crowd. And if you've seen the film The Passion of the Christ, you'll have some idea of what that involved. The Jewish leaders then demand that Jesus be crucified. And the reason they give to Pilate is this. They say he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God. Then we read, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from? Where are you from?" Well, it's a good question, isn't it? Where is he from? No wonder this Roman governor was afraid. Could this man standing before him, could this man that he's just had flogged, could he actually be the king, the ruler of the kingdom of heaven, the Son of God? When you read the account, the evidence starts to stack up. The prophecies made about him hundreds of years before his birth, even specifying which town he would be born in. The miracles he did during his life, which even his enemies could not deny. His resurrection from death, leaving behind an empty tomb and stunned witnesses who saw him. "Where are you from?" asked Pilate. Well, the answer was in the carol that we just sang. In the second verse, it said, "He came down to earth from heaven," the second verse of Once in Royal. He came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all. And his shelter was a stable, and his cradle was a stall. That is why Jesus has a monopoly on the truth. There's no one else who has got a CV like that. No one else has come down to earth from heaven. No one else has walked this planet who is God and Lord of all. And that is why we need to listen to him. And that is why Christmas is such fantastic news. Apparently the suicide rates in Europe, they drop in the last days before Christmas, but they climb rapidly afterwards. And researchers call it the broken promise effect. The broken promise effect. So they say that we invest masses of energy, hope and cash into making Christmas magically solve life's problems. But too often it crashes and burns, and for some, tragically, the disappointment is simply too much. Well, where are you investing all your hopes? What are you investing all your hopes in? Perhaps not in Christmas, but maybe in your career, maybe in money, maybe in your bonus, if you get a bonus, maybe in a relationship, perhaps in your family, maybe even in the prospect of retirement. Beware the broken promise effect. None of these can answer the big questions of life. None of them can. And none of them can bear the weight of all your hopes in life. It's like trying to drive a 10-ton truck over a 2-ton bridge. It cannot bear the weight. But Jesus can bear that sort of weight. He can deliver on everything he promises because of who he is. He offers God's forgiveness through his death. He offers relationship with God. He offers eternal life now and beyond the grave. And as the king, he can deliver. There will be no broken promise effect. And he's offering a good deal more than a sense of otherworldliness when eating caviar. A good friend emailed me on Monday asking me to pray for his parents, neither of whom are Christian. His father has had everything that this world has to offer. He was on the board of one of the big multinational oil companies. He was hugely successful and wealthy. But my friend wrote that in his retirement, his father is now depressed, he's run out of steam, and he has no hope for the future. It's this broken promise effect. But Jesus can make good on all his promises because of who he is and because of what he's done. Jesus said, "For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Wouldn't this Christmas be a good time to begin listening to Jesus' voice? Why not take away one of these John's Gospels, take it away with you and read it. The book that you get at Christmas about how to build a roof-mounted windmill to power next year's fairy lights, that will be a good read, no doubt about it. But why not take this and give it a read as well? We've got stacks of them on the table at the back. It's free. Take it away. Who are you listening to in life at the moment on the big questions? Who are you listening to? The music store HMV, I'm sure you're aware, stands for His Master's Voice. And the name came from the title of a painting of a dog listening to a wind-up gramophone. I'm sure you've seen it. And the little dog Nipper was listening to his master. Well, who are you listening to in life at the moment? Are they telling you the truth? How would you know? Why not start coming along to our Sunday services here on the barge in the new year? It's a chance to listen to Jesus' voice as his word is explained. Why not sign up for the course we run called Christianity Explored, begins middle of January, where you can discuss, you can ask any question that you'd like. But if I could just flag up a caution as I finish. If you read through this John's Gospel account over Christmas, something that you'll come across which may surprise you is this. We all have an innate hostility to the truth about God. We all have an innate hostility to the truth about God. When the truth appeared in human form, he wasn't welcomed, was he? He was flogged and he was crucified. People who come with the truth, they take things too far. They get put in their place with nails if necessary. By nature, Jesus says, we don't run after the truth about God. We run from it. We don't like it. And in its place, we pursue anything but. But even though the truth may be inconvenient and uncomfortable and challenging, there is no future in running from it. There's no future in running from him. A family friend of ours is a keen footballer. And he's fit as a fiddle. And as part of his training, he would run around a 3-mile course going down country lanes. When my older brother was around, this friend would send him off and give him a head start of sort of 2 or 3 minutes. And off my brother would go like a hare out of the traps. Wouldn't be long, though, before he'd hear the relentless pounding of footsteps coming up behind him ever closer. Wouldn't be long before there'd be this sound of heavy breathing getting louder and louder, like a steam train coming up behind him. Wouldn't be long before the inevitable happened and this guy would overtake him. The truth is like that. It doesn't matter how fit you are, the truth about God will catch up with each of us in the end. The moment of truth comes to all of us. I was reminded of this on Monday as I was sitting at my desk working away and looked out of the window to see a funeral procession driving past down the street. The truth about God catches up with all of us in the end. But then it is too late to start listening to Jesus' voice. The opportunity will have passed. Which is why I love Christmas. Because every year it provides another great opportunity to listen to the one who has the answers to all the big questions of life. The one who came into the world to bear witness to the truth. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. We stand as we sing our final carol.